Can I take your order, please?
And we're live.
Hello and welcome back to another Wally. I'll need you to remove all your articles of clothing, please. Even your underwear. Episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
This is Walter Vici.
This is Hermano De Silva.
What we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. And remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com, and stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us, and to find out what we will be discussing next week. Speaking of feedback, boys, we'd like to thank Holly Bowen Cross, who liked our Facebook page and then proceeded to comment on it. She writes, just discovered your podcast and love it, and wanted to know, how do I enter the Oscar contest? I didn't quite understand if I emailed it or posted it here or on your blog. Thanks. Well, Holly, thank you very much for your feedback. And the question, Walter?
Is either. We'll take any of the entries. You can post them on your Facebook, on our Facebook page. You can email them to us. It doesn't, either way is fine.
You want to remind people what the contest is?
The contest is you get to pick the winners of the major categories of the Oscars. So we're going with Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Director, Best Movie. Did I say that right? I said Best Picture?
No. You said Best Director.
So Best Director, Best Actor, Best Actress, Supporting Actor, Supporting Actress, Best Picture. And there's a couple other ones. Why am I not thinking of them off the top of my head?
Are we doing like Best Cinematography?
No, not like that? not the top.
You just want to do the top six?
Like the top six.
The four acting categories, the director and the picture.
Oh, and best writing.
Oh, best writing.
Yes, and best writing. And the person who gets the most picks out of those wins a DVD of their choice and a First Time Watchers t-shirt.
Very good.
Well, there are two writing categories, correct? Adapted screenplay.
Oh my God, Wally.
Bring them in.
Both?
Yeah, both.
Okay.
So the top seven categories.
Okay.
So best original screenplay and best adapted screenplay.
Best adapted screenplay, best original screenplay. Yep.
Okay. We'll remind people at the end of our episode.
That's right.
Exactly.
And what I'll also do is also, I'll either tweet it out and we can also post on the Facebook page just to make sure everyone's clear on what we're going to be doing.
Very good.
Sounds good. There's no confusion.
Once again, thank you, Holly, for commenting and following us.
We love our listeners.
Yes, we do. In this episode, we'll be talking about the controversial 2012 film Compliance. But before we get into that, it's time for Yay or Nay. Yay! This is the part of the show where we discuss what we have seen recently on our own. Hermano?
Whoa, why am I going first?
Because I told you so.
All right. Let's see. I watched three movies. First one I want to talk about is a movie called Killer Joe.
Oh, man.
I've been dying to see this.
Yeah, me too. I have this in my queue coming up soon.
Directed by William Friedkin, director of The Exorcist.
Yes.
Basically, the synopsis is when a debt puts a young man's life in danger, he turns to putting a hit out on his evil mother in order to collect the insurance. That is a really generous... I mean, that's pretty much what the story is. I mean, the young man is Emil Hirsch. He's playing... he's kind of like this backwoods rednecky character that is in debt to some like mobster type guys, and he needs some money quick. So he knows that his... He's told that his mother has some life insurance policy, and he's also pointed in the direction of a dirty cop played by Matthew McConaughey, who does hits for people for, you know, depending on the hit, he charges a set amount of money. Matthew McConaughey basically has a lot of rules, like, you know, you'll see these characters in movies that have set rules and you gotta follow their rules to the T, you know, you can't stray from them at all.
Sounds like a certain movie we had butted heads over, if you will.
I know which one you're thinking of. can't think of
the name. Headhunters? I'm thinking of Headhunters.
No, I wasn't thinking of that. I was thinking of Killing Them Softly. But anyway,
I'm also thinking of The Transporter. He's always breaking his own rules.
Yeah. The movie is crazy. It's totally not what I thought it was going to be. It's kind of... The best way I can describe it is... Have you guys both seen Deliverance?
I've seen good portions of it.
Yeah, I've seen it in...
Well, you know what it's about. It's about, like, these rednecks in the backwoods. Just imagine those characters, except the whole movie's about them. And you get to see their family life, and you get to see more than just these crazy rednecks. You get to see, like, how they live day to day.
Wait a minute. When you talk about Deliverance and the redneck, you mean the guys on the camping trip?
No, I'm sorry. The actual rednecks.
Oh, where they encounter in a certain part.
The movie's a total, like, just character piece where you ever see, like, whenever you watch a movie and it's, the story is just very simple. You know, it's a very simple story. Very simple setup, and then the entire movie is just about just watching these characters and what they do and just how crazy they are and just ridiculousness. I think the movie's well done. I just think it's one of those movies that it's got a few different things going for it where it's like slightly quirky, slightly crazy, off the wall. Like it kind of goes over the top at times. I don't even know who I could recommend this to. Like I'm gonna say meh, but there's a scene specifically in it that will you'll never look at a chicken drumstick the same way ever again. So I'll say meh because it's hard to recommend this movie to.
Did you enjoy it though?
Yeah, I did actually. I thought it was good. So if you don't have if you're not like a tight ass, you might get something out of this movie.
And apparently, if you're not eating chicken while you're watching the movie,
yeah, definitely don't eat chicken while you watch this movie because you're gonna barf. My next movie I watched was actually really, really good. I highly recommend you guys see it. I watched The Imposter.
I'm dying for this movie to show up at my house.
So insane. It's almost as insane as Compliance, the movie we're going to review. Basically, it's a documentary centered on a young Frenchman who claims to a grieving Texas family that he is their 16-year-old son who has been missing for 3 years. That's all I'm really going to say about the movie because it's so easy to spoil this movie. But it's ridiculous. Like, where this movie goes, you'll never be able to guess. And it's just really, really well done. And the way it's shot really cinematically. Like, it's not shot like a typical documentary where, you know, especially one that's recounting a story that took place, like, in, I think, the 90s. And it's usually, like, you know, grainy, like, home video footage. And there is some of that. But when they do the reenactments, like the ones that they don't have, like, you know, home video footage of, it's shot like, you know, like The Dark Knight or something. It looks ridiculous. Like, it's one of the nicest looking documentaries I've ever seen. And the subject matter is crazy. I mean, I just gave you pretty much the basic setup. And then there's also this other element where there's like, it kind of evolves into like sort of like a mystery. And it kind of almost, the movie's a little... The movie kind of tries to point you in a certain direction, and I think it's a little manipulative at times, but overall, it's really solid. It's probably, if I had seen this last year, it would have been in my top 10 for sure.
Wow, really?
It's really, really well done. I highly, highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's been going around, the festival rounds, and then all the awards circuits, you know, the Austin Film Critics and BAFTA and... You know, the British Independent Film Awards, all these awards, it's been either nominated or winning.
Yeah. So. And it's crazy. I mean, much like when I was watching Compliance, like, I'm watching this movie and I couldn't believe that these things actually happen and they're true. And that's one of the reasons I love watching documentaries because, especially, you know, when you have, like, all this backstory and all this, you know, footage to complement it, like, this, and you see, like, wow, this actually happened. I cannot believe this. This happened and this all played out the way it did, so I highly recommend it. Say yay on that one. And then finally, I saw something that I've been dying to see since it was announced last year that they were doing it. I saw The ABCs of Death.
Oh, what? Son of a bitch.
I've heard of this.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we told you about it. Yeah. I remember this.
Okay. The basic premise is somebody went out and put out the call to 26 directors from all around the world. They were tasked to do a short film, anywhere from, like, you know, a minute to, like, 5-7 minutes, something like that. And they were given a budget of $5,000. And the other part of it is it was going to be part of a larger anthology, and each director was assigned a letter of the alphabet. So you were to take that letter and then come up with a word and make a movie around that word.
Okay.
So... Directors literally from all around the world. You got Japanese directors, German, like East European, like everything, Russian, American, obviously, like Mexican, all around the world. Just crazy, crazy shorts. And it mostly is in the horror genre because it is the ABCs of Death. And it's mostly, I want to say it stays strictly horror, but it doesn't because it wasn't based solely in one genre. It's about death more than it is about, you know, making a short horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the movies do stray, and they're not your typical horror movie. But I love the horror genre. I love anthology films, like much like VHS, which I really liked. You guys haven't even seen that yet, right?
It's on Instant Queue now, though.
Yeah, it is. I highly recommend you guys see that. I actually appreciate VHS a lot more. I think mostly because maybe they weren't tied down by the small budget, and they were able to create something a little better. And just the whole package of VHS, I think, is a little nicer than this, because you got 26 short films, which is a lot.
In 2 hours.
Yeah, and they're all about 5 minutes long. Some of them are really short. Like the Ty West one is like literally like a minute long.
That's amazing.
It's ridiculous. And it's actually, I was disappointed by it because it's kind of, I don't want to spoil it, but it's kind of just a gross out. But the problem with this movie is that there is 26 short films, and I'd say a lot more of them are bad than are good.
Right.
You know, I don't know what happened. Like, a lot of them are just... I don't want to specifically pick on this country, but I am going to. The three Japanese ones are terrible. Like, really, really bad. Like, you might like them because, I mean, you think Machine Girl is, like, off the wall? Wait till you see these three short films. It's re-fucking-diculous. Like, what they put out on screen. It's crazy.
Just put that on the poster. But Romano says, re-fucking-diculous.
Yeah. I'll make the cover of that. It's kind of cool too. What they do is like they don't announce to you what the I mean you can follow along what the letters are if you know the alphabet, obviously, but it's fun trying to pick out what word the movie is, you know, trying to depict. So they don't actually reveal that to you until the little short is done, and you know, it's kind of like a little game. Mia and I watched it together, and we were playing it, we're trying to figure out what word this is. I hope you guys get to see it soon, because I'd like to, you know, talk more about it with you guys. But I would recommend it for anybody that's a fan of, like, you know, the horror genre, a fan of anthology films. There are some that actually looked really, really good. Like, I thought D, I won't spoil what it is, but D was really awesome, is my favorite one.
Is it Vampire Slayer?
No. It's not Vampire Hunter D. Tim will especially love E. E is right up your alley. You're going to love it. And
there's a joke there somewhere.
No, I'm serious.
I'm trying to find one real quick.
Anyways.
Yeah, you're going to love E, and Wally's going to love all the Japanese ones. So, yay! ABC's of Death.
Really? Even though you said more than half of them are not that good, you would give it a
yay? No, I mean, Mia didn't like it, or liked it less than I did. There were some that I could appreciate, but there are some that are pretty hard to watch because... I don't want to spoil anything about any of them, but there's a lot of them that are just like really gross, or just stuff happens in it that's really tough to watch. I mean, some stuff that
they try to go overboard.
Yeah, some of these, because these directors were literally not on a leash. They could do whatever they wanted,
right? And no, it's restriction, not rated either, right?
I mean, yeah, there's nothing is off the table. Like, there's stuff in some of these movies that you would expect to see in a movie like a Serbian film. So be prepared. Not all of them are like, you know, just, you know,
jump scares and stuff.
Yeah, some of them are just like, oh, that is fucked up.
I don't know if you said this in just now, I'm sorry, but do they kind of tie them in all together other than the alphabet?
No, they have nothing to do with each other other than they're all part of the same anthology, and like they don't follow any kind of like linear, you know, continuing storyline.
And do they like have segues in between, just like showing the letter or something like that?
Yeah, after like the movie, it's a cold open, it just opens and all of a sudden you're watching a movie, and at the end of each of the shorts the letter will be revealed and it'll tell you what word, you know.
Oh,
and then okay. Who I think they give a little quick thing of like who directed it.
Gotcha.
And what country, I think.
Fair enough. All right, I'll go next. First movie I saw and I'll talk about is The 5-Year Engagement. This came out last year and stars Jason Segel and Emily Blunt, and Chris Pratt is in it as well. And it was directed by Nicholas Stoller, who is also known for directing Get Him to the Greek and Forgetting Sarah Marshall. And I think he also wrote... what do you call it? Well, yeah, he wrote The Muppets, the newest Muppets movie, and also Yes Man. So if you've seen movies like Yes Man and I Love You Man and Forgetting Sarah Marshall, this definitely has that tone to it.
All right.
It's a sweet movie. It's fine. It's inoffensive. And there's moments in it that are generally laugh out loud, you know, but there's other moments, you know, it falls into some typical romantic comedy cliches, but, you know, it stars Jason Segel, so you know what kind of what you're getting into, and it's rated R as well, which is good. So, like I said, if you've seen I Love You, Man, and you like that movie,
yep.
Which I did,
yes.
Then you'll like this movie as well. I don't think it's as good as I Love You, Man, because I think, like I said, it just kind of goes back into some of those cliches. And it's also a little too long. It's 2 hours and 4 minutes. They could have easily cut off about 15 minutes or so.
Some of the comedies lately being like 2 hours plus, man. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Chris Pratt is pretty funny as his best friend. But, yeah. I'll give it a yay because I think you could definitely do worse than this, you know. Next movie I'll talk about is Young Adult, starring Charlize Theron and Patrick Wilson and Patton Oswalt. Patton Oswalt, by the way, is awesome in this movie.
He's awesome in general.
Yes, he is, but he really gets to show his dramatic chops in this film, which is really good. He also kind of did that in The Fan. The Fan? Was it The Fan?
No, The Fan is the Robert De Niro.
Big Fan, I'm sorry. Big Fan, He's really good in that, but in this movie, it's pretty interesting. It's directed by Jason Reitman, who also did Juno and Up in the Air, two movies which I really like as well. And Up in the Air, I really love. And he also did Thank You for Smoking. So if you're familiar with,
I've seen all three of those.
If his tone, and you like those movies, you'll like this movie as well.
I've actually seen this.
However, this movie is much darker than those. You've seen this movie,
yeah? I've seen it.
It is much darker and. Actually, Charlize Theron, her character arc is actually non-existent. She pretty much stays the same throughout the whole movie. And in a film like this, you kind of expect by the end that she makes a revelation. But really, she doesn't, you know? And I think with movies like this, where a character doesn't have much of an arc, I would be really pissed off or annoyed or be like, why did I just waste my time with this? But this, I wasn't. And it was really more of a revelation at the end than it was a true arc, because it's more the other characters. I'm trying not to spoil it. The other characters have a reveal for her, but she just doesn't accept it. And I really liked her in this. You know, she's really a very good actress, and it's really amazing how unlikable she is, and yet you still want to continue the story with her. And I think it's more of the supporting characters in this, and the way it's written. It's written by Diablo Cody, so, and obviously she did Juno as well, so she has a history with Jason Reitman, and I think this is probably her best written role so far. Did she win an Oscar for this? I think it was for Juno, though. I'm not sure. Anyways, I really appreciated this movie. I liked it a lot. I'd give it a yay. Okay. Next, I saw the most recent Steven Soderbergh film, and that was Side Effects. Now, Soderbergh came out with three movies last year. Did Contagion come out last year?
I don't think so. I think it was Haywire and Magic Mike. And
Magic Mike. So
and Contagion was the year before.
Oh, okay. So if I was to, what I'm trying to say is, if I'm to relate this to any of his other movies, it would be Contagion, because I think going into this, people would expect that he is going to do with the pharmaceutical and psychiatric industry what he did with Contagion. And in Contagion, he took the whole pandemic idea and the fallout of that and really made it into a good thriller about what people would actually do in such a situation. And I really enjoyed that movie. I thought it was pretty good. In this movie, I think I kind of expected going into it that he would do that same thing with the pharmaceutical industry, but he didn't. He makes it into a thriller that is much more personal. And you first, it's really interesting too. You first start out with Rooney Mara's character, who is amazing in this. She is great in this. And then about halfway through it, you actually start focusing on Jude Law's character. So it really shifts tonally many times throughout this movie from outright thriller to paranoid drama to psychological horror at times. There's many different tones in this movie, which I really, really appreciated that he was able to handle very well. He supposedly said that this is his last film. I think it's more of an extended break. But it's a heck of a way to go out. I liked it. I don't know if people need to rush out to see it in the theater. I think it would be a good rental, and I would definitely give it a yay. Next, I'll talk about a movie that was really, really interesting. Directed by Georgios Lanthimos, who also directed a movie that Hermano and I really enjoyed, Dogtooth. His most recent film that was released in the U.S. Called Alps. And Hermano, I know you really enjoyed Dogtooth.
I did.
And we have been trying to compel Wally to see this movie. But at the time, about a year ago, I
had watched Enter the Void and was just so turned off by
for some reason,
the idea of any of this.
Well, yeah, but it has nothing to do with Enter the Void.
I know, but at the time it struck me as being the same type of movie because people were talking about only basically these two movies. So I kind of put them in the same category.
There's nothing that compares to what you're going to see in Dogtooth.
Nothing. So. I definitely recommend people seeing Dogtooth before they see Alps, because it'll give you an idea into the mind of this director. You haven't had a chance to see this yet, Hermano?
No, but I know what it's about.
Yeah, and it's on Instant.
Yeah.
And what it's about is a group of people start a business where they impersonate the recently deceased in order to help their clients through the grieving process.
I'm in.
Okay, but first off, see Dogtooth beforehand.
All right.
Please.
No, I will.
Okay.
I probably put both of them in the queue at the same time. I should get one after the other so I can watch both.
Alps. It's really interesting. I mean, I'm saying that a lot now. Interesting, because I've seen a lot of interesting movies. He has this aesthetic that is so. It's very dry because it just puts you. It puts the camera in these situations and just makes you try to figure out what's going on, and he does that ultimately in this movie. At the very beginning, you have no idea who these people are, what they're doing. I don't think you even know throughout by the end of the movie how they even got to know each other. But it more follows the one. There's a group of four people, I guess. Yeah, four people, and one of them is a woman who is also a nurse in a hospital, and she actually develops a bond with a family whose daughter is injured in a car accident, and then she ultimately takes the place of this daughter, unbeknownst to the group that she has started this business with, and the drama kind of unfolds from there, and it follows some other people, but mostly it focuses on her and her relationship with that family and the group, and it follows her in her personal life as well. It is odd. It is compelling. I don't think it's as good as Dogtooth, though. But I would definitely recommend people watch it if they enjoyed Dogtooth. So I'll give it a... It's kind of between a meh and a yay, but I'll give it a yay. And then finally, there's two movies that I'm not going to talk about, only because I want people to go to the CinemaFix podcast in which I was a guest on talking about the Die Hard franchise. And because knowing that I was going to be on this with a couple other people, I decided to watch Die Hard with a Vengeance and then Live Free or Die Hard in order to refresh myself. And to talk about the whole franchise. And I want people to go to the CinemaFix podcast. Look for it and download a bonus episode that's coming out this week. And I'll also be on their next episode where they review...
Live Free or Die Hard.
No.
Good Day to Die Hard?
A Good Day to Die Hard.
Yeah, yes. That one.
like I said, the CinemaFix podcast, you can hear what I had to say about the Die Hard franchise in general, and also the two movies that I watched this week, Live Free or Die Hard and Die Hard with a Vengeance.
So if you want more Tim... CinemaFix.
CinemaFix, yes.
Traitor.
Wally?
All right. for my birthday, I was treated to seeing the Oscar-nominated short films, both the animated and the live-action categories.
Very nice.
And this was actually pretty awesome. Got to see all the Oscar-nominated animated shorts, and then after that, there was a in between each short, a prior Oscar winner. They kind of introduce, they kind of talk about what they did, and then they run a short, and they go back to these, these other two guys. They did a short, and then there's the honorable mentions that didn't get nominated, but were also worth mentioning. Some of them are pretty awesome. Probably my favorite one out of all of them was Head Over Heels, which is about a man and woman who live in a house that's flying through the sky. And he always has gravity on his side, and she's always has anti-gravity on her side. So she's always on the ceiling, and he's always on the floor. And
did you say this is the animated
one? This is one of the animated ones. Okay. And there's a little bit of conflict. As this conflict escalates, the house tumbles out of the sky and crashes. So now they're reversed. Now he has no gravity, and she's on the floor.
It's funny.
And it's a really sweet story. I really liked it. I would hope that this one wins the Oscar, but I have a feeling it's going to go to Paper Man, which is also in the same category. An animated short against a Pixar animated short. I mean...
Okay, I remember Paper Man. Okay.
So it's one of those things like, well...
That was before Wreck-It Ralph, right?
That's right.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Now I remember that.
This is going to be hard to compete against something from Pixar, because Paper Man does look awesome. It's the black and white one where he's throwing the paper planes.
Oh, okay, yeah, I'm sorry. I was for some reason I was thinking of the moon one. Okay,
gotcha. And that's probably the one that's going to win the category. Obviously, yeah. It's Pixar. The other contender is The Longest Daycare, starring Maggie Simpson, which I think would be the only other contender that would be able to take down Paper Man because of The Simpsons.
Maggie's from The Simpsons.
Yeah, that's absolutely it's about Maggie's first day at daycare, and the baby with the unibrow is her enemy in this whole thing. It's pretty funny.
That sounds funny.
But my favorite of the bunch was one called Head Over Heels, about this older couple.
Cool.
Another one that was also really cool to watch was one called Fresh Guacamole, which is... one of those movies that, one of those, little shorts, I was like, I don't know if he's trying to say something. He's just, it looks more experimentative than anything else. It's, you see, a guy, he cracks open, an avocado, and when he scoops it out, it's avocado, and then he goes to dice an onion, and it turns into dice, and then he dices it again, and it turns into smaller dice, and then he throws those in there. He cuts up a jalapeno is made out of a light bulb. He cuts a light bulb in half, takes the inner part of the light bulb out, and then dices it up, and it becomes little Monopoly houses. And then he takes a pincushion, and he dices it up, and becomes Monopoly hotels, and that's it's red dice. They become red dice, and those go in the... And it's all, done with, a combination of, live action, quick cuts. So you see these, odd items, and then at the end, he sprinkles poker chips, and then goes to dip one, and it snaps, and then it goes to black, and you're crunch, crunch, cool, but I don't think it's Oscar worthy.
Gotcha.
So I think Paperman, either Paperman or The Longest Daycare, is going to win this one. But my pick of the best was Head Over Heels. Absolutely love that movie.
Very cool.
I also got to see the live action shorts. One really stuck out at me is one that I really love to see converted into a feature film. It's called Death of a Shadow. It's from, I believe, Germany. It's about this guy who looks like he's dressed up in 1910 garb, with this old-fashioned, old-timey camera. And when he looks through it, he can actually see someone getting murdered, even though that they've been murdered years before. And he takes a picture of their very last moment on Earth, right as they die. And it only takes a picture of the shadow. And he brings these photos to a guy called the Shadow Keeper, who lives in the Hall of Shadows. And there are these works of art all down this wall, but they're all people of shadows. And he stacks them to the wall with large metal pins. And there's a whole story involving him and this woman that he meets over the course of what he's been doing. Apparently, you get the idea that he's almost a time traveler and has been doing this for a while.
It's French and Belgium.
French and Belgium. This movie's awesome. I hope this one were to win the Oscar. I absolutely adored it. Our tearjerker one is called... it's Edgar? Is it called Edgar? I can't remember the title of it. Help me out, Tim.
Sorry.
It's basically a movie about a man who's got Alzheimer's, and he's he thinks he's you know, at home, and it turns, as the movie plays out, you find that he's actually institutionalized, and he's not of clear mind. That one was really good, really well done. And another one that I thought was interesting as a pick was one called Buzkashi Boys, which deals with it was a joint Afghan and United States film about these two young boys. One is the son of a blacksmith, a poor blacksmith, and the other one is a street urchin. And these two kids are friends, and the street urchin has dreams of becoming a buzkashi rider, which is a weird game that they play in Afghanistan where you have two teams on horseback dragging around the headless carcass of a goat. This actually exists. So, wow. The street urchin wants to become a buzkashi rider because you see like these like traditional like Afghan horsemen, and you know they're playing this game, and the people are into this. Like this is like football here, like, over there. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty interesting movie. Those are the three movies of note to me in watching these shorts. I absolutely loved Death of a Shadow, and that's one of those movies I'm sitting there going, oh, I hope this. This gets made into a full length feature. This is like a concept I want to see like explored a little bit more.
So the names of the short films for live action are Assad, mm-hmm. Buzkashi Boys, Curfew, Death of a Shadow, and Henry.
It's Henry, the one I was thinking about, the man with Alzheimer's. Okay. That one was was really well done.
And the names of the short film animated are Adam and Dog, Fresh Guacamole, Head Over Heels, Maggie Simpson and the Longest Daycare, and Paper Man.
So if these movies are playing in your area at a local theater, do yourself a favor, check them out. They're really well done.
I think you can just find them online as well.
You can also find. I don't think you can find them online. Yeah. I haven't tried to look. I mean, I got to see them in the theater, so
okay.
Certainly worth checking out. I had a ball watching these movies. It was just a really fun day. Which brings me to what I watched most recently, which was my most anticipated movie of 2013.
Cheater.
No cheating allowed. Not even taking it. It's Top Gun in IMAX 3D. Oh, yeah.
Now, give people a little background about your history with Top Gun.
Tim is to Die Hard, and Hermano is to Point Break what I am to Top Gun. I know the movie by heart. I know all the lines. I'm annoying to watch it with, because I will mutter these things under my breath as it goes along. I pretend to fly a plane at times if I'm watching it, because I know exactly where all their hand positions are supposed to be. This movie I saw when I was a kid. I had a love of aviation before, and this one just, I mean, trained up to 11 for me as a kid. I've always, you know, my dad and I are always going to the air shows and watching the jets and stuff like that, and this movie was just pure joy. Being in the theater, there was almost no one in the IMAX. There was, like, myself and, like, maybe five or six other people. And then I put my glasses on, and as soon as I hear the lights go out, and you're dong. I had goosebumps. I was like, I was beside myself. I don't get emotional movies, but I was like trying to like hold back like the Super Guinness. Like, I can't believe this is it. And
had you ever seen this on the big screen before?
I remember seeing it when I was a kid.
Okay.
I haven't seen it on a big screen since. And with the IMAX experience, oh hells yes.
How was the 3D conversion?
It was all right. I think Hollywood's better off not going with the 3D gimmick. Because it didn't really. I thought it was going to add more, like, oh, the fighter plate when they're chasing around, like, you know, Viper and
a lot of those are actually shot from far back. You know, those scenes.
It's actually the first movie that actually used interconnected cuts to give the illusion of flight and stuff like that in the combat. It's directed by Tony Scott, and for people who are asking on Twitter, yes, the entire volleyball scene is in 3D. I had to double check because when the scene started, I'm like, is this in 3D? And I did the 80s tip my glasses down to see the screen, and it's all blurred. I'm like sitting there going, they really put this entire scene is actually in 3D.
Sand seriously. And sweat flying in your face.
And Val's nips.
Now, a freaking cougar just doing the freaking ninja pose for no reason.
Did the sweat fly into your face, Wally?
No. But what this movie really benefited from was the IMAX treatment.
The sound.
The sound is unbelievably loud. You have no idea how loud this movie is until you sit in an IMAX theater and get it from both sides. It was awesome. Like, the 3D, yeah, added a little bit here and there, but overall, like, the sound and, like, the giant picture made this movie so much fun to watch. It will be out of theaters in about 48 hours. So you need to go and buy your tickets now. Because this is so worth it.
How was it packed? Was it?
It was myself and six other people. But I got a free poster because they like stacks of posters. Like, I'll take one of these.
You gonna frame that?
Hell's yeah, I'm gonna frame that. I'm gonna get Kelly McGillis and Tom Cruise to sign it. What's really cool is seeing Tom Cruise as a young Tom Cruise when he's, like, his face is still kind of got the baby like chubbiness to it before it's like all angly. Like,
unfortunately, he does not run in that movie.
I'm out. He does not run in this movie. He does walk fast. Sure. That's not really warning, but he does walk fast. Like when he's pissed off after Goose dies.
Spoiler.
Oh, this movie is 20 years old. You get no spoilers. 25 years old. You get no spoilers. But he's like hustling off the flight deck, and you know Viper and Jester are like, you know, put him up again. You know, and Michael Ironside's voice in IMAX, it sounds awesome. By the way. You're like, whoa.
That's funny.
So yeah, this movie is certainly a yay all the way. And it's going to get a Blu-ray treatment, I believe, in the next couple of weeks, if it's not already released on Blu-ray.
But you can't wait, huh?
Oh, I will own this in every format they give it to me in. So yes,
do you have the Laserdisc?
You know what?
The Beta.
I think I might actually still have the Laserdisc somewhere. Oh, I never had a Laserdisc player, but I have the Laserdisc.
You do?
Yeah, I do.
Oh my god.
I have to see if I think it's in my apartment somewhere. But yes, Top Gun, IMAX 3D, shit yes. Yay all the way.
All right, fair enough.
Hey, Tim. Do you know this is episode 50?
It is episode 50. And you know what we do in every fifth episode?
What's that, Tim?
We forgo trailer hitches for something we like to call Movie Battle Royale. This is where we use flickchart.com to create our collective top 10 list of all time. We will be pitted with 5 pairings of movies and decide which one is better with each battle. Shall we get started, boys?
Let's begin. Round 1.
Step Brothers versus Signs.
Step Brothers. Signs is garbage.
Signs is not garbage.
God, I hate that movie. Step Brothers.
Oh, boy. Since Hermano has been the tiebreaker for a lot of these recently, I'll let you go first.
This is tough, man, because one, I like them both, yeah. But for very different reasons, obviously. I'm going with Signs.
All right, Signs it is. I would go with Signs as well. I think there's more to glean from that one. Okay, next up. If Flickchart would want to work for me.
I don't think it's a site. I think it's the laptop you're using. What kind of laptop is that?
Shut up. It's like somebody took a bite out of a piece of fruit on the back of your laptop.
Yeah, man. There's a problem.
That's rude. Don't bite somebody else with a piece of fruit and put it back.
Okay. Let's see. The 40-year-old virgin versus Ace Ventura and Nature Calls.
40-year-old virgin.
Yeah, of course, the 40-year-old virgin.
Hands down.
All right. 28 Days Later versus Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Fuck. Last Crusade, sir. That's my favorite of all the Indiana Jones movies, believe it or not.
Really?
That is my absolute... I love that movie.
Why is it your favorite?
I think it's one that... It's the most... I don't know. It's the most like action-packed of them all to me. It's like acts of, you know, daring and adventure and
yeah. There's a lot of good stuff going on in that tank scene. You know, when he's trying to get
the tank
on
scene and the boat chase and I don't know. That's my favorite of them. And after that is Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's like close second.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go Last Crusade, I guess.
Yeah, I will do. Sorry, Hermano.
I have no problem with it. I really like the 28 Days Later though. So.
All right. Next up. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind versus Walk the Line.
I've only seen one of those two movies.
And which one is that?
Walk the Line.
Oh, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is on your list of same. You need to see that. And that's the purpose of one of the purposes of this whole venture here.
And I will move that behind The Searchers.
Okay,
so
then.
I should get that next once I'm done watching Sound of My Voice.
Perfect.
I believe it's on Instant Queue as well.
Then that makes it even better because I can watch it this weekend.
It was. I'm not sure if it still is, but it was.
So remember that. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. You must watch
it. It's in my queue. I just got to move it up.
Okay. Big Daddy versus Walk the Line.
Walk the Line.
Yeah, I would say Walk the Line as well.
Because no one pees their pants and Walk the Line. I don't care how cool you say it is.
The Matrix Revolutions versus the 1953 film Houdini, which I've never even knew existed.
I've not seen that.
I've not seen that either.
Okay, so it'll be The Matrix Revolutions versus Training Day. Training Day.
Yeah, I'll give it to Training Day, actually. Revolutions. Is that the third one?
Revolutions,
like the third
one. And then
Reloaded. Matrix Reloaded
is the second one, and then Matrix Revolutions is the third one. Yeah. Now I actually have.
I'm going to keep my vote with Revolutions because I really like the machine battle at the end of that movie. It's pretty badass.
I agree, and actually I have no problem with this Matrix sequels. A lot of people have problems.
A lot of people don't like them, but I mean,
I don't think they're as good as the first one, but I still really enjoy them.
Exactly, I especially like the third one. The second one, no guns. No one fights with a gun in the second movie, really. Mm-hmm.
So it's Training Day. And
that's it?
That's it?
Yeah, that's five.
Awesome. Very good. That didn't change our top 10 or 20 at all, but, you know, it at least got you to watch something that is on your list of shame.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
And honestly, I haven't seen it since shortly after it came out, so I may have to revisit that one.
It holds up. It's really good.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get into our review of Compliance. The plot. When a prank caller convinces a fast food restaurant manager to interrogate an innocent young employee, no one is left unharmed. Based on true events. The writer and director, Craig Zobel. The actors, Ann Dowd, Dreema Walker, and Pat Healy. Hermano, you had actually seen Compliance a couple of weeks ago and mentioned it in our Yay or Nay segment.
Yes.
And now we're supposed to review... we were supposed to review another movie this week, but due to weather, you know, it seems that delayed our Netflix
story. Giant-ass blizzard.
Yeah. Hermano, why don't you refresh us on what you said at the time, but just give your overall thoughts without too much detail, because I want to go into spoilers really soon, because I think this film can easily be spoiled, even though it's based on true events. I really just want to give all three of us just our base level, you know, thoughts, and then go into spoilers. So, Hermano?
I think what I basically said was that it's hard to say that you enjoy this movie because it's a really tough watch once it gets into the, you know, what's going on in the movie. When it really gets deep into it, I mean, you go through, I went through a whole range of emotions. I was shocked, I was surprised, I was angry, I was just, I was dumbfounded. I couldn't believe that this was actually based on a true story. And I had heard rumblings. It's one of those things that gets passed down where you always hear the story about the woman who spilled hot coffee on herself, and then, you know, she supposedly sued and won $1 million. But that's all you ever heard. And then I also saw that documentary a while back called Hot Coffee.
Oh, okay.
And you get to see the real story behind it, and you get a little more, you know, knowledge, and you're like, oh, wow, I was totally wrong this whole time. Well, this wasn't one of those cases, but it was one of those, like, all of a sudden I had to go back and get a little more information. I'm like, this really happened. Like, I can't even imagine that this ever went on. And not only did I find out that it really happened, but there was a lot more going on as well. And, I mean, I recommended it. I recommended people see it, but I was a little reserved on recommending it because it is such a tough watch.
Wallet?
All right, this movie tested my patience for an hour and a half.
Yeah, I thought it would.
God, I was all set with the movie at 20 minutes in. I was like, I have to sit and watch the rest of this stupid movie because this is going to piss me off the rest of the movie.
Uh-huh.
The movie, first off, is 20 minutes too long for an hour and a half long movie. They padded this shit with stupid, nonsensical shots of fucking paper cups and puddles. And I was like, you sons of bitches. This is already the hallmark of something I'm going to absolutely hate. And you know what? I wasn't far from the truth.
Okay.
This is not a based on true events movie, in my opinion. This is a reenactment of actual events because I read the articles on this, and everything that happens in the movie happened in real life. I find that impressive. They didn't do any sort of creative licensing or anything like that. Everything that happened in this movie actually all happened at this one incident in Kentucky. So that was fairly impressive, but. This movie.
You know, it's funny you say that because as I was watching it and when I finished it, I recalled what Hermano had said, and and how he had thought that you would not enjoy this movie, and I thought, yeah, you would not enjoy this movie, and it reminded me of your reaction to the movie Kids, in which every character in that movie pissed you off, and how I think every every character in this movie probably pissed you off.
Not pissed me. The characters in this movie don't piss me off. And when we get to more detail, because I don't want to accidentally spoil anything.
Okay, so detail. Would you recommend people watch this?
I recommend people would watch it. The movie-making style of this movie, I absolutely abhor it. The extra shots of just paper cups and, like, you know, people eating, just, you know, constantly
cutting back. I noticed about halfway, maybe two-thirds into it, how many times he went back to shots outside of what was happening.
Yeah, and the padding of this movie, yes. And then, like, some of the other scenes that are in this movie, like, I don't want to say anything until
we get the spoilers. It's only 90 minutes long, so, I mean...
It's terribly padded. It's a terribly padded 90 minutes.
It feels long, but to me, it felt like I was watching, like, a 2.5-hour movie, because I felt like I was being, like, dragged across, like, the coals. Like, I was just like, holy shit,
30 minutes in, and, like, we're sitting there asking ourselves, like, how are they going to extend this movie for another 60 minutes?
So it was more... Okay, so it wasn't what was going on. It was more the filmmaking style that annoyed you.
The filmmaking style really, really got to me. I was like, this is... It just seemed... To me, it felt poorly made.
But the events that happened...
The events that happened... You know, I'll talk about that when we get into spoilers, because I have a direct reference to this. To this particular movie.
Are you able to couch it in any way of saying, like...
I ran a fast food restaurant.
No, what I mean is...
I was hoping you'd get into that, because I wanted to... I was like, of all three of us, I don't think you worked at a fast food restaurant ever. I mean, it's not really a spoiler, but to say that they tried to paint the picture that she may have been overly stressed about this rush, lunch rush hour or whatever, and that she had a lot going on in her mind, and maybe that contributed to the fact that she was this stupid to let what happened happen. And I immediately thought of Wally. I was like, Wally ran a fast food. Not only was he ran, he was the manager. I cannot imagine Wally ever letting this happen. And I'm like, has it ever been so busy that you're like, I can't take it. I'm just going to follow.
No, I mean, it can get crazy. And it all depends on how well you deal with pressure. I've actually gotten one of these calls when I was working in the restaurant at the time. Cause this happened shortly before I left. This is back in like 2001, 2002. Every now and then you get a call, like, you know, someone, you know, claims something happened or whatever. And one time I had a customer call up and it was really busy. And I was like, look, I'll just get you, I'm going to call you back. You know what I mean? Like, I can't really talk, you know, someone was missing like nachos and out of their, you know, their bag. And I was like, I'm really sorry about that, but let me get your name and your number. I'll give you a call right back. Right now it's really busy. I can't be off the line. And, I mean, I got chewed out for that because they want me to, you know, they want you to always make sure the customer is taken care of.
Yep.
But at the same time, I was also running shorthanded. You know what I mean? So I was like, I'll just get your name and number. I'll give you a call back. I'll rectify it then. But right now, I can't sit here and talk while you're running your mouth. You know? There'll be a little bit more commentary on this as we get into spoilers.
Okay. I agree with a number of things that you guys have said. And yes, it took me about 20 minutes to put my patience aside and finish this movie. I know I was compelled to finish this movie, and I was even more compelled at the end, you know, as to what happened. There was some structural problems with this movie that I did have, not so much the padding as to another element of the movie, which we'll get into in spoilers. But and as far as recommending it to people, you're right, it is a tough recommend, and it's really a case-by-case basis of if you have a high tolerance for...
You have to like movies to watch a movie like this.
Yes, it is a filmmaker's movie, but it's also a movie about common sense and the limits of people's willingness to follow authority. So beyond that, I think we should go into spoilers right now.
All right.
So, one more thing to say. I did mention that last time where, like, it seemed like there was this trickle-down effect where, like, everyone was just kind of doing what they were told throughout the entire movie. And I think that's the message of the movie. And there was a test.
Milgram experiment.
Yes.
That I was going to mention next.
Yeah. So Wally knows about it. Do you know what the Milgram test?
The Milgram experiment.
Yeah. And I guess it's these experiments that were conducted, like, in the 60s or whatever. And they were kind of staged, but only two people were in out of the three people that were... involved in the test were in on it, and the one person was not, and they were pretty much the person that was being manipulated into seeing if they would pretty much inflict pain. It was pretty much like an electrical shock treatment or therapy or something like that.
Yep.
Equivalent to that. And this person was being told, all right, if this person gets something wrong, you got to shock them or something like that.
Yep, it was an instructor that tells a test subject, we're going to ask this person a question and put something in a sequence. Every time they get the sequence wrong, you have to shock them.
Mm-hmm.
The shock won't kill them, but as the more they get wrong, the more voltage we're going to put through this person. And the person on the other side is an actor. And
they're pretty much pleading, like, please don't do this.
Do this again. They're at some point they're crying on the other side, like, it hurts so bad, like, I can't take this anymore. And then the instructor says, you must continue.
He's the authoritative figure. You're listening to him. You're supposed to listen to him.
You must continue. You must finish this experiment. You know, this has to go on. And
it was just basically just a test, like, how far would people go with this when just being told to, like, where does the common decency end? And where does it begin? Like, it's just, it was a very interesting experiment. I think the movie is kind of that experiment. Like, it's just where it goes. It's ridiculous how many of these people, even the ones that seemingly don't do anything wrong, but they kind of do at the same time because they don't try to stop it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the younger people, like, that are witness to this. Like, maybe they're not directly involved, but they also don't do anything to stop it.
Yeah.
So, should we get into spoilers?
Let's get into spoilers now.
Spoilers. So, one thing that I wanted to mention about the problem that... One of the problems that I had with this film was how about halfway through, they decide... Craig Zobel decides to show the other end of the line. The caller who is making this prank call. And I thought that was a big mistake.
That is a big mistake, because he should be faceless.
Until the end.
Until the very end.
If you
end.
Want to show him at the end.
The very end.
I think that reveal of where the cops find him, that would have been a great reveal.
Yes.
I see where they were going with it. I think he was just trying to show them, because when they do reveal the guy, he's a normal guy. He looks like a normal average Joe. He doesn't look like someone you would expect to be, like a young person or just some punk kid or something. Like, I think that's where they were going with that. I agree. I don't think they should have showed him at all. I don't think they should have showed him ever. Like, I think it would have... Just leaving it open as this could be anybody would have... By not showing him, it was would have been more powerful than actually showing him and showing him as just a very average-looking man.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if he was at, like, work on his headset or, like, you know, at home. But, like, they're constantly cutting back and forth to showing him, like, doing something. It would have been much more effective if he was just a voice on the phone.
Another problem I had was it seems like a lot of the characters, a lot of the people who they had working in this restaurant followed a lot of very stereotypes. The young kid who's the friend of this girl who gets violated, he in the movie he looks like he's about 17 or 18, you know, and in real life he was about 27.
Yeah.
But They have him just be this typical teenager just doing this job for, you know, because he
works in high school. That's what it's like, though, unfortunately.
I know that's what it's like, but... Okay, see, I think there's this fine balance between having reality and having characters that don't fall into these cliches that are very obvious. Like this black teenage girl who is a caricature of any other urban
youth.
Yeah, with the way she speaks and the way she acts, and especially the way she acts towards the customers. What do you want now? You know, chewing the gum.
My shit, I've been like, fuck home.
Yeah. It took me, like I said, the 20 minutes to get over that hump of these cliche, stereotypical characters to finally get into the flow of this movie.
Yep.
I'm with Wally, where I don't see, like, anything amazing about this movie other than the subject matter. Like, it's not an amazingly well-done movie, the cinematography or the direction.
Well, there is one shot that I thought was done really well, and that's the shot where she's forced to perform oral sex. And it's a faraway shot. And her on the ground.
On her knees, but the... It's one of those things, like, you're wondering, what's going on? And then they show you only, like, her hands, her ankles, a close-up of a cup.
which was funny because that was obviously very
the drinking straw.
The drinking straw was obviously symbolic, you know. Yeah. But still, you know, I liked that shot. That shot of that reveal of her on her knees
yep.
was very well done. But there are, I think this guy has a sense of photography and placement, camera placement, stuff like that. It's just the padding
I think what he was going for was he was trying to do it almost like it was in real time, because if you look up the actual, how long the actual event took place, it was about like a little over an hour. It was like 70 minutes.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, I believe so. So if you add that onto the length of the movie, there was probably about 20 minutes of padding.
Yeah.
Like just B-roll of customers eating and just kind of showing the outside of like the restaurant and everything that's going on and like how something dark is going on just like 20 feet away from these people, you know, like, and unbeknownst to them, they're just enjoying their, you know, their food and all this is going on in the back room. And can we talk about the woman that played the manager?
Oh yeah.
I thought she was really good. Like,
I was so annoyed by her because this was one of my hurdles I had to go past, because just her lack of common sense in such a situation. And then I had to put myself in her shoes, and I had to say to myself, there are so the majority. I worked in retail. I worked at grocery stores, and I was very jaded at a young age to find out how much of the masses are just imbeciles, idiots.
Yep.
And that's what these people are. They're obviously they're very busy in a very tough situation of how busy they are, but also just a lack of common sense.
I'm not making excuses for it. I think the performance was good, especially after I saw the actual ABC interview.
Yes.
Because I'm like, wow, like, whew. Like, the way she played this woman and seeing the surveillance footage and just the way it was reenacted, I thought the movie on that level did a fantastic job. Her performance was good. I thought everyone else was just okay. The girl wasn't bad, I mean, but...
And Deb?
She, no, I'm sorry, not the manager, the young girl.
I'm sorry, that was...
Dreama Walker.
Dreama Walker, yes.
Yeah, like, she was fine too, but she didn't have a ton to do. She just had to kind of... She just asked the same question of her, why am I doing this? Like, she didn't have a huge range of, you know, emotions. I mean, other than, you know, because of her situation, she was just kind of stuck in, this is the way you got to react the entire time. But the woman, the way she was just kind of dismissive or really complacent and just like, I'm busy, I can't deal with this now. And just kind of, the way she would kind of like fall for the charm of the caller on the line. And she was just, she was falling into every trap. And some of the stuff he said was so ridiculous. And you're like screaming at, it's one of those movies you scream at the TV, like, how can you be this dumb?
Well, that goes into the whole thing of how much it's human nature to follow authority, you know. And you have to, obviously he was on the other line, he was building this relationship, this authoritative relationship with these uh-huh. people. And that's how he got these people to do this, because of all of that was built up, mm-hmm. you know, that authoritative trust, you know, and how he sounded.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And you saw, like, the just little moments where she would start to kind of question, like, I mean, in real life, the police station was a quarter mile away.
Yeah. That was a great shot.
Yeah.
Where they show the police officer who's responding to this at the end of the movie, and at first I'm like, wait a minute, why is this all one continuous take? And then I had forgotten, oh yeah, it's because that they had just meant, no, they mentioned later in the movie, a few minutes later, that yeah. the police station was only a quarter of a mile away.
Yeah, they were there within 5 minutes.
Yeah. Or less. With him, less than 5 minutes.
And yeah, that actually was a cool shot. I also liked the shot of her walking out to the car and putting the clothes in her car. It was just like a continuous shot.
Yeah.
Nothing fantastic about it, but I just thought, like, what must be going through her mind, like, as she's walking to this car and throwing this young girl's clothes in her car? Like, I'm just like,
yeah.
how you had so much time to think about it and think, like, what am I doing? Like,
yeah, well, especially before that, you have to think when she's being ordered to have her remove all her clothing and then her underwear,
yeah.
you know? Obviously, they're very conflicted at that point.
Yeah, she's playing sympathetic, but also doing what this guy is saying, and I'm like... My mind was blown watching this movie. It's like one of those movies, like, as I was watching it, and at the time we weren't going to do a review on it, I'm like, man, this movie is ripe for discussion.
Yeah,
like,
that's just, why I knew we had to review
Yeah, this. Like, I'm like, I'm so glad we actually got to do, like, a full review on it, because it's movies like this, and I'm just like, man, this movie has so many things going for it. that just brings up a lot of conversation.
Anything else you want to add, Wally?
Well, so I wonder if you guys picked up on anything about any of the characters in the movie. There's something that's wholly missing that when the caller first calls the restaurant, he only gives a description of a person.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody notice that Becky's not the only one that's not wearing a name tag in the whole movie?
No.
All the other characters have name tags except for Becky.
Okay.
He's the only one that's not wearing one.
Okay.
So when the caller first calls, like, yo, you have a girl there, about 18, yeah. Blonde. Who, Becky? Yeah, I have her name here as Rebecca.
Right.
You know what I mean? She's not wearing a name tag.
Yeah.
So at that point, my job was like, all right, well, who was it specifically? You know, did they have, you know, what did their name tag
this
say?
This is you asking.
This would be my first question. See. Was like,
you're vigilant.
I need to know who's calling me, you know what I mean? Because I've dealt with counterfeiters. You know what I mean? Right. I have to talk to the secret.
Well, this is the point of people like you who are very vigilant in that would be very vigilant in situations like this. You have to put yourself past that your own emotion of that.
That's one of those things. Like I can't turn it off. Like that's
so you I'm can't turn this, off I'm, common sense.
I'm watching this. And I'm sitting there going,
well, if you have it, yeah.
And I mean, I know the type of manager that she is too. And I was like, my fiance likes to sex me too.
Yeah.
I've had.
Yeah,
people who are like that working for
like
me,
a and people
even above me, like people who are like in corporate above mm-hmm. me. I'm just like, the fuck out of my restaurant. I've kicked, you know, like I've had like corporate guys show up and like, oh, I'll give you a hand. I'm like, nope, you can go on the other side of the counter right now. I need to do this.
Well, isn't that part of being a manager? Is trying to relate to you, like, because usually when you're a manager, you're going
to
be like a little older
relate.
Than your
you just
employees.
You just got to be in charge. You have to know what to do and when to do it.
Isn't part of it to relate to your employees? I mean, get them maybe on your side a little bit. Like, you don't want them to hate you, obviously. So.
No, but I didn't mind being. If I had to play the bad guy and send people home, I didn't care. I had to make sure my job to make the restaurant run smoothly and get everything out. That was that's my task.
That was the other thing too. In that point, when she's trying to relate to her co-manager and Becky at the beginning of this movie, all of that was just so over the top, over dramatic, overacted. You know, of her trying to relate to her by telling her about her boyfriend, and then. When she walks away, Becky going, oh my God, and going to her phone and texting this. And
well, see,
this
I come around the corner, I see that, I go, put your phones away.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's...
I mean, the movie does try to kind of really kind of steer you and be like, all right, this may be why, because she's overly stressed because of how busy it is. And Becky and that other girl were snickering when she tried to relate to them, you know, because she's so old.
And the kid, the teenager again,
Kevin?
In the beginning of the movie when the manager is giving the instructions for the day and telling them how busy it is and the supplies that they don't have, you know, he's almost breaking out in laughter, you know, his face is just quivering.
That's the other thing, we didn't mention, is like, the movie opens with, I guess they lost a bunch of product because someone left the freezer door open.
Yeah.
So she's dealing with that as well.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think like they say, like thousands of dollars of food that got wasted and they're going to be missing
bacon.
Yeah. You know, she's obviously in for a rough day. And not that I'm not giving her any kind of like pass on this. Like, I still think you got to use common sense no matter how busy you are. You don't do what she did in this movie. You strip search. What cop would call and tell you to strip search like a 17-year-old or whatever?
17-year-old and send a male. You can't send a male employee into
to keep an eye on a naked 17-year-old girl. I worked in retail and shoplifters when I used to work at Sears. Just quickly. If there was a female shoplifter and there was only men that worked in the security office, they had to get like a female manager to stay with her because they could not be alone in the security office with her. And this is somebody that allegedly stole something. You know, there's rules. Like, you guys as a manager know that stuff. You can't.
Why male employees can't go in and clean the woman's dressing room.
Yeah.
You have to send a woman worker in to go get the pieces out and bring them back to the car.
Yeah.
One thing I will say about this movie lends itself to a certain... that's what I'm looking for. Cautionary tale.
Oh, yeah. You know,
like, don't take anything from strangers.
Yeah, of course.
So, I can imagine, like, you know, Hermano being a new parent, like, watching this movie, and now shit's going to haunt him. Cause it's not scary as
we need to talk about Kevin, but it's scary.
I mean, it haunts me sitting there going, like, if I ever had a girl, man, like a little girl, I'd be, like...
Yeah, yeah. I know, I see where you're going. We haven't even mentioned, like... This movie is based on this crank call, and apparently this happened many more times than just once. There's a little text at the end that says it's happened at least 70 times.
Yep.
All across the country. This is just the event that lasted the longest. This one lasted like a little over an hour, like I said. So I think the movie tried to do something. I think the movie, the guy who made this movie was tasked with something very difficult. He could have gone a lot of different ways with it. He didn't, like Wally said, he didn't take a lot of liberties. He kind of told the story the way it was. He tried, I feel like he was going for it in real time. Because the way it plays out, it seems like it's playing out in real time.
Like, yeah, it does feel like that.
And in order, like, of how it happened. And, I mean, he had to obviously insert some kind of dialogue in between. Who knows what was said, because this was just surveillance footage. There was no sound, as far as I know. And I think they did a phenomenal job on that end. It's just a tough movie to recommend. It's a hard watch, and it will infuriate a lot of people. And a lot of people will be dumbfounded and not believe that this could actually happen.
Yeah, it was based off of a call made to a McDonald's in Mount Washington, Kentucky.
Yep.
Yeah, and so I read through the Wikipedia thing, and I'm like, it's Wikipedia. How accurate is it? And it's really accurate,
yeah,
because
exactly.
Then I, like you said, Hermano, I looked it up on the YouTube, the ABC interviews with these people, and it is an actual reenactment. You know?
Exactly. It's not based on truth. These even are down the actual events as to what happened, give or take the beginning.
Even down to the ABC interview itself, which the movie ends on, like, even down to the point where the lawyer says, don't answer that question, she can't answer that question. Even that, they did. I was like, wow, man. Talk about staying really true to, like, everything that, you know, it's based on. I was on that. I say good job.
Yeah. And then, you know, so there were a lot of other ones. Well, let's go back to this guy, though, that made these prank calls and how they show him in the movie. Like I said, I was disappointed where they cut to him about halfway through the movie. They show him, you know, on the other end. First, he's in, like, an office or whatever, in a house. And then later on, you see
a sandwich.
You see these slow reveals. He's walking through his house, and he's making a sandwich, like you said. But he's later he's taking notes. He has a notebook to keep everything straight. You later see, I like this little touch. You see him put his notebook in a drawer and put it underneath, like, these police detective magazines.
When the guy was arrested, he actually had a number of, like, applications to be a police officer,
right?
Police publications,
yeah,
and all that.
And I think he actually worked in a corrections facility.
Yep, he worked for a corrections type of facility.
And the
reveal that he actually has a little girl.
Yeah, yeah,
which was pretty. I mean, I was like, dude, what are you doing? Like, I mean, it's crazy. Like, and if you know anything about the real story, did you find out what actually happened to this real life guy?
He was acquitted.
Yeah, he was
acquitted because there wasn't enough evidence.
Even though they
searched his house, they found the calling card that had been made. That calling card had been used to make multiple calls to restaurants in the area. And this dude fucked up a lot of people's lives. Like, this woman was engaged to be married, that she called off the engagement after this. The guy who she was engaged to,
5 years in prison.
5 years in prison.
Yeah, I know, that is the craziest thing to me, because he was in prison for sexual assault on a minor. You know,
yeah.
And the
person that instigated it and pretty much steered it.
Now,
nothing happened to
him. My question is that mandatory? Is that a mandatory statutory rape thing? Or did a jury convict him? And I'm thinking to myself, what fucking jury would say, send this guy to prison? At least, at the very most, probation, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. What you get a lot of in court cases is, like, this is what's called the CSI effect.
Yeah.
Since that show came out, people want to see the forensic evidence. Mm. And the only forensic evidence they get to see was most likely the tapes. The closed circuit television.
Yeah.
You take those out of context, what do you have?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I imagine 5 years does seem a little, to me it seems light for, you know, rape.
And you're a sex offender after that for the next 10 to 15 years.
Yes, I agree. It sounds light in a case where, you know, he wasn't ordered. It was his own doing to do this.
Yeah.
If he was ordered by somebody else, think about that. That's a circumstance. You know, it's out.
Well, then you compare that to the Nuremberg trials, where you had a number of Nazi officers saying, "I was just following orders."
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, that's a good point. Should we end it on that dark note? Or is there any other place you want to go with this movie? Anything else you guys want to say?
Trying to think.
Or do you just want to get into grades?
People are dumb.
I mean, that dude should have been convicted on not using common sense alone.
And then even the McDonald's Corporation, like, fucked these people that were in there too.
Lawyers,
as far as, like, you know, as far as, like, what they gave them, as far as, like, damages goes.
Yeah, because they had settled and then they had to resettle.
And then it was appealed, and then it was like, oh, we're going to withdraw this.
Yeah.
You know, it's just corporate America.
So grades, Wally.
This is a come back to me last. I'm gonna have to calculate this one a little
bit. I'll give it a B+.
My grade is based solely on effective storytelling and keeping it really, really close to you know, the actual events. It's not based on the subject matter. I'm with Tim. I give it about a B+.
See, I'll say
B.
Okay.
I'm of two minds. Uh-huh. There's sticking to the subject matter and actually doing a complete reenactment of this, and then there's what I consider to be bad filmmaking. I'm going to give it a C. I'm gonna meld both of these scores together and give it a C, because he did stick the.
Well, what would your other score be?
I thought there was two, a D. Wow. It's basically a B for story and a D for execution.
Oh, okay.
So, put those together. I'm gonna give it a C because he did stick. I mean, doing a full on reenactment of something that's, if someone told you this story, would you find it unbelievable? Like, that's gotta be an urban myth. You know what I mean? Doing that, but at the same time, padding your movie for about 20 minutes, you know what I mean, with just a lot of unnecessary shots, it made it really hard to watch, like, excruciatingly painful for me to watch. I was like, get on with it. I want to see progress.
Sure.
So I'm going to give it a C.
Okay, so B+, B, and C, so B- average?
B-.
That's fair enough, I think. All right, B- average it is. Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com.
Or follow us on our Tumblr page, firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
I also want to remind people to check out the Cinema Fix podcast that I was privileged to be on as a guest. There's a bonus episode coming out this week discussing the entire Die Hard franchise. And also this weekend, we will be discussing the newest Die Hard film. I will contribute to the Cinema Fix podcast to help talk about the newest Die Hard film, A Good Day to Die Hard. So stay tuned for that. I would assume next week.
Benedict Arnold.
What? Who's that? We'll also be posting up the actual Oscar contest categories up on our Facebook page, and I'll tweet those out too.
Okay, very good. And what do people win again?
You win a DVD of your choice and a First Time Watchers t-shirt.
Well, not a DVD of your choice. I thought it was
an Oscar DVD?
An Oscar contender for best film.
We'll do that. I was gonna make it open.
Oh, any DVD?
I was gonna make it open.
You know someone's gonna ask for Serbian film.
Oh, no.
that's gonna be all right.
You're gonna have to go to a counter and buy it.
You can't find the movie anywhere.
So exactly. we'll make an Oscar nominated movie
of your choice. Any of the Oscar nominated movies, and a First Time Watchers t-shirt.
Very good. Okay, where was I? Please download our episodes in iTunes and feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you have any suggestions for movies for us to watch, send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. And stay tuned for our next episode. We will finally be discussing the 1956 John Ford Western, The Searchers.
That is the First Time Watchers podcast, because we like to watch on closed circuit television.
You gonna play that?
Yeah.
The song?
Yeah. Hang on a second. This is courtesy of the Morning Stream.
This is the other Scott Johnson podcast. I haven't subscribed to this yet.
I don't know how well this is going to come up, but hang on a second. It's just going through the intro before we hear the song that I want you to listen to.
Who sings it? It doesn't matter. It's amazing. Well, I wrote this song for the Christian youth. I want to teach kids the Christian truth. If you want to reach those kids on the street, then you got to do a rap. A hip-hop beat. So I gave my sermon an urban kick. My rhymes are fly, my beats are sick. My crew is big and it keeps getting bigger. That's cause Jesus Christ.
When I first heard that this morning, I was like, it's like one of those things in your mind that, is this really going to this direction? Holy shit, it is. And I just burst out
that
laughing.
That is awesome. Well, I can just picture you at your desk, Tim, which was like your headphones on and like people just like all staring at you like, what the fuck? fuck is he listening to? And just trying to stifle, like, just outroarious laughter.
Oh, God. Oh, that's so awesome. Great.
Oh, I gotta tune into that podcast, man.
Yeah, it's
I'm missing out. I mean, I love Scott Johnson stuff, so.
I do recommend it.
So I will have to give that
a listen. It's good morning stuff, morning fun to get your day going.
Well, I don't get to listen to podcasts until about 1 o'clock once.
Gotcha.
Once everybody else in the office that listens to other music leaves, so it doesn't sound cacophonous in there.